vavatu sahanau bhunaktu sahaviryan karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastoma vidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 4. Chapter 18 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Prakrit asked Sukadev Goswami, question 616 of Srimad Bhagavatam. It appears so. Must be the 16th question in the sixth canto.
Remember, previously we started from the first canto. This, the numbers.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. Okay. Question. My dear Lord, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with the demoniac mentality. Why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? Did they perform any rituals or pious activities? Sukadeva Goswami answers this question throughout the rest of the chapter, but especially in verses 66 to 67, where he asks a question of his own. If one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, even once, he receives the benefit of being promoted to the spiritual world and possesses the same bodily features as Vishnu. Diti worshipped Lord Vishnu for almost a year, adhering to a great vow. Because of such strength in spiritual life, the 49 Maruts were born. How then is it wonderful that the Maruts, although born from the womb of Diti, became equal to the demigods by the mercy of the Supreme Lord? Mother Diti asked Kasyapa Muni question 617 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Diti replied, My dear Brahmana, I must accept your advice and follow the vow. Now let me understand what I have to do, what is forbidden and what will not break the vow. Please clearly state all this to me. Kasyapa Muni answers this question verses 47 to 54. Mother Diti asks Lord Indra, question 618 of Srimad Bhagavatam. I prayed for only one son, but now I see that there are 49. How has this happened? My dear son, Indra, if you know, please let me know, please tell me the truth. Do not speak lies. Indra answers this question, verses 71 to 76. The rhetorical questions uttered by Mother Diti in verses 24, Kasyapa Muni in verses 32 and 41, and the Maruts in verse 63, and Lord Indra in 75 do not fall under the study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter gives the history of Diti, the wife of Kasyapa, and how she followed a vow to have a son who would kill Indra. It also describes how Indra attempted to foil her plan by cutting to pieces the son within her womb. In relation to Tvashta and his descendants, there is a description of the dynasty of the Adityas, sons of Aditi, and other demigods. Krishni, the wife of Aditi's fifth son, named Savita, had three daughters, Savitri, Vahariti, and Trayi, and very exalted sons named Agnihotra, Pashu, Shoma, Chaturmasya, and the five Mahayagyas. Siddhi, the wife of Bhaga, had three sons named Mahima, Vibhu, and Prabhu. She also had one daughter whose name was Ashi. Dhata had four wives, Kuhu, Sini, Vahli, Rakha and Anumati, who had four sons named Syama, Darsha, Prata, and Purnamasa, respectively. Kriya, the wife of Vidata, gave birth to the five Purishyas, who are representatives of five kinds of fire gods. Bhrigu, the mind-born son of Brahma, took his birth again from Charshani, the wife of Varuna, and the great sage Valmiki appeared from Varuna's semen. Agastya and Vasishtha were two sons of Varuna and Mitra. Upon seeing the beauty of Urvasi, Mitra and Varuna discharged semen, which they kept in an earthen pot. From that pot, Agastya and Vasishtha appeared. Mitra had a wife named Revati, who gave birth to three sons, Utsarga, Arishta, and Pipala. Aditi had 12 sons, of whom Indra was the 11th. Indra's wife was named Paulomi, Sachi Devi. She gave birth to three sons, Jaya, Rishabha, and Midusha. By his own powers, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as Vamanadeva. From his wife, whose name was Kirti, appeared a son named Brihadshloka. Brihadshloka's first son was known as Saubhaga. This is the description of the sons of Aditi. A description of Aditya Urukrama, who is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will be offered in the 8th canto. The demons born of Diti are also described in this chapter. In the dynasty of Diti appeared the great saintly devotee Prahlad and also Bali. Prahlad's grandson, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were the first sons of Diti. Hiranyakashipu and his wife, whose name was Kayadhu, had four sons, Samhlada, Anuhlada, Hlada, and Prahlada. They also had one daughter, whose name was Simhika. In association with the demon Viprachit, Simhika bore a son named Rahu, whose head was severed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kriti, the wife of Samhlada, bore a son named Panchajana. Lada's wife, whose name was Tamani, gave birth to two sons, Vatapi and Ilvala. Ilvala put Vatapi into the form of a ram and gave him to Agastya to eat. Wild group of sons, huh? Anuhlada, in the womb of his wife, Surya, begot two sons named Baskala and Mahisha. Mahisha, sir. Every one of them gets
sorry.
It. Prahlad's son was known as Virochana, and his grandson was known as Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj had 100 sons, of whom Bana was the eldest. After describing the dynasty of the Dityas and the other demigods, Sukadeva Goswami describes Diti's sons known as the Maruts, and how they were elevated to the position of demigods. Just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu had killed Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Because of this, Diti was very envious, and she was eager to have a son who could kill Indra. By her service, she enchanted Kashyapa Muni in order to beg from him a greater son to do this. In collaboration with the Vedic injunction, Vidmasham Api Karshati, Kashyapa Muni was attracted to his beautiful wife and promised to grant her any request. When, however, she requested a son who would kill Indra, he condemned himself and he advised his wife Diti to follow the Vaishnav ritualistic ceremonies to purify herself. When Diti, following the instructions of Kashyapa, engaged in devotional service, Indra could understand her purpose and he began observing all her activities. One day, Indra had the opportunity to see her deviating from devotional service. Thus, he entered a womb and cut her son into 49 parts. In this way, the 49 kinds of air, known as the Maruts, appeared. But because Diti had performed the Vaishnava ritualistic ceremonies, all the sons became Vaishnavas. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. 1-9, the descendants of Aditi continued. 10-19, the descendants of Diti. 20-37, Maharaj Prakrit inquires about the 49 Maruts. 38-44, Kashyapa Muni analyzes the nature of women. 45-55, Kashyapa Muni's stipulation for Diti's request. 56-68, Indra attempts to spoil Diti's vow and the Maruts appear. 69-78, the reconciliation of Indra and Diti. Verses 1-9. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Prishni, who was the wife of Savita, the fifth of the 12 sons of Aditi, gave birth to 3 daughters, Savitri, Vahriti, and Trayi, and the sons named Agnihotra, Pashu, Shoma, Chaturmasya, and the 5 Mahayagyas. O King Siddhi, who was the wife of Bhaga, the 6th son of Aditi, bore 3 sons, named Mahima, Vibhu, and Prabhu, and 1 extremely beautiful daughter, whose name was Ashi. Datta, the 7th son of Aditi, had 4 wives named Kuhu, Sinvali, Rakha, and Anumati. These wives begot 4 sons named Sayam, Darsha, Pratha, and Purnamasa, respectively. The wife of Vidatta, the 8th son of Aditi, was named Kriya. In her, Vidatta begot 5 fire gods called the Purishyas. The wife of Varuna, the 9th son of Aditi, was named Charshani. Bhrigu, the son of Brahma, took birth again in her womb. By the 7th of Varuna, the great mystic Valmiki took birth from an anthill. Bhrigu and Valmiki were specific sons of Varuna, whereas Agastyan and Vashishta Rishis were the common sons of Varuna and Mitra. The 10th son of Aditi. Okay, Bhrigu and Valmiki means that they were specifically Varuna, because then it means they probably would have been with his wife. But then it mentioned about Varuna and Mitra when they saw, who was it? Urvasi, or?
Urvasi.
Yeah, Urvasi. Then they both discharged semen, so that semen seems to have become those two.
Oh, so those two were his sons, and those are the common sons of both.
Yes. Upon seeing Urvasi, the celestial society girl, both Mitra and Varuna discharged semen, which they preserved in an earthen pot. The 2 sons of Agastya and Vashishta later appeared from that pot. They were therefore the common sons of Mitra and Varuna. Mitra begot 3 sons in the womb of his wife, whose name was Revati. Their names were Utsarga, Arishta, and Pipala. 1-6, Srila Prabhupada comments. Modern science is trying to generate living entities and test tubes by processing semen, but even long, long ago it was possible for semen kept in a pot to develop into a child.
In vitro fertilization since that time?
No, but the point is it was just from the pot.
Okay. Like that. It'd be very powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, O great, O King Parikit, Indra, the king of the heavenly planets and 11th son of Aditi, begot 3 sons named Jayanta, Rishabha, and Midusha in the womb of his wife Paulomi. Thus we have heard. By his own potency, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has multifarious potencies, appeared in the form of a dwarf as Urukrama, the 12th son of Aditi. In the womb of his wife, whose name was Kirti, he begot 1 son named Brihadshloka, who had many sons, headed by Saubhaga. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Maya, translated above as by his own potency, here refers to the eternal Swarup Shakti of the Lord, which is also called Maya. Madhva gives the following scriptural evidence for this meaning. Ato Maya Mayam Vishnum Prabhadanti Manishina. The wise called Vishnu the person made of Maya. And so it means his own potency. So Yoga Maya. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Later, in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I shall describe how Urukrama, Lord Vamadev, appeared as the son of the great sage Kasyapa, and how he covered the three worlds with three steps. I shall describe the uncommon activities he performed, his qualities, his power, and how he took birth from the womb of Aditi. Verses 10 through 19, the descendants of Aditi. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Now let me describe the sons of Aditi, who were begotten by Kasyapa, but who became demons. In this demoniac family, the great devotee Prahlad Maharaj appeared, and Bali Maharaj also appeared in that family. The demons are technically known as Daityas because they proceed from the womb of Aditi. First, the two sons named Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha took birth from Aditi's womb. Both of them were very powerful and were worshipped by the Daityas and Danavas. The wife of Hiranyakashipu was known as Kayadhu. She was the daughter of Jamba and a descendant of Danu. She gave birth to four consecutive sons known as Samhlada, Anuhlada, Hlada, and Prahlada. The sister of these four sons was known as Simhika. She married the demon named Viprachit and gave birth to another demon called named Rahu. While Rahu, in disguise, was drinking nectar among the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead severed his head. The wife of Samhlada was named Kriti. By union with Samhlada, Kriti gave birth to a son named Panchajana. The wife of Hlada was named Damani. She gave birth to two sons named Vatapi and Ilvala. When Agastimuni became Ilvala's guest, Ilvala served him a feast by cooking Vatapi, who was in the shape of a ram. Because you should invite sadhus over and then feed him his brother, and then when he said Vatapi come out, then he would burst out of his stomach and kill the sadhu. You know, so that was for these brothers great fun. But Augustus' digestion was so good that before he said that, he had already digested him, so there was no Vatapi. So always good to have good digestion. The wife of Anulada was named Surya. She gave birth to two sons named Bashkala and Mahisha. Prahlad had one son, Virochana, whose wife gave birth to Bali Maharaj. Thereafter, Bali Maharaj begot 100 sons and the wife in the womb of Ashana. Of these 100 sons, King Bano was the eldest. The activities of Bali Maharaj, which are very laudable, will be described later in the 8th canto. Since King Bana was a great worshipper of Lord Shiva, he became one of Lord Shiva's most celebrated associates. Even now, Lord Shiva protects King Bana's capital and always stands beside him.
What's that capital?
I'm not sure, it doesn't say.
Okay.
You want to know if it's, yeah. If it's you know, if Sao Paulo or, you know, if it's Kali or something. The 49 Maruts were also born from the womb of Aditi. None of them had sons. Although they were born of Aditi, King Indra gave them a position as demigods. 10 through 19. Yes?
Can you say that even though the Daityas were much less pious than the demigods, because of the Prahlad and Dhani,
Not necessarily, because you see also then Vamanadev is taking birth there and so many. So the point is wherever there's a devotee, then there's always great fortune. So that's, like you're pointing out, that's the actual fortune, when there's devotees. You know, the devotees of the Supreme Lord. So that makes things fortunate. You know, so, and that also shows that it doesn't matter what family you're from, you can still be a devotee. Right? Verses 20 to 37. Maharaj Parikit inquires about the 49 Maruts. King Parikit inquired, My dear Lord, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with the demoniac mentality. Why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? Did they perform any rituals or pious activities? My dear Brahmana, I and all the sages present with me are eager to know about this. Therefore, O great soul, kindly explain to us the reason. 20 to 21. Shrisuta Goswami said, O great sage, Shaunaka, after hearing Maharaj Parikit speak respectfully and briefly on topics essential to hear, Sukadeva Goswami, who was well aware of everything, praised his endeavor with great pleasure and replied. Right? So he's making the endeavor of hearing, trying to analyze, trying to process, you know, that how it'll be useful or what's the, you know, point. Then he asks his questions, right? Then we get, then, so therefore, then get very praiseworthy questions. Right? Srila Prabhupada comments, Maharaj Parikit's question was very much appreciated by Sukadeva Goswami, because although it was composed of a small number of words, it contained meaningful inquiries how the sons of Diti, although born as demons, became demigods. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur stresses that even though Diti was very envious, her heart was purified because of a devotional attitude. Another significant topic is that although Kasyapa Muni was a learned scholar and was advanced in spiritual consciousness, he nonetheless fell victim to an inducement of his beautiful wife. To the inducement, excuse me. All these questions were posed in a small number of words, and therefore Sukadeva Goswami very much appreciated Maharaj Parikit's inquiry. Because otherwise, sometimes we've ever seen it that you have the 5-minute question, you know, you get the whole background and that, and actually what color was the meteor that hit the earth when the dinosaurs, you know, did that, and then which dinosaur died first, was he on the right or was he on the left, and which side his head went, you know, all those kinds of stuff. Or you have the community question, where the person can't even figure out his question, so everybody else in the audience start, well, do you need this and that, and so, you know, it gets into this whole discussion amongst everybody there, what is the question, right? So, Parikit Maharaj is being praised here for, in a very small amount of words, saying exactly what he wanted to say, and the question was relevant. He wasn't saying, what time's lunch today? You know, it wasn't that kind of question. Okay. Yes, yes. Is there going to be rice for lunch today? You know? But being in Bengal, it's a rhetorical question. Yeah. Or, there's going to be rice, right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur offers 3 meanings of this pastime. Artavat means with many meanings. One meaning is obtained from the story, performing tamasya bhakti to the Lord with the goal of harming others, one becomes purified in heart, and along with developing bhakti without tamas, one gains liberation from samsara and gives up the tendency for violence to others. Diti is the proof of this. This is the first meaning of the story. Those with crooked hearts who see faults in others, though they are intelligent, do not see those same faults in themselves. Diti is also an example of this, with a word starting in verse 24. This is the second meaning. A learned person can be cheated by the attraction of a woman. Kasyapa is an example of this. That is the third meaning. Right? So all these that come out in this story. So someone who's unqualified by worshiping the Lord, even in an unqualified state, purifies themselves and actually comes to the proper platform. Right? Someone who's qualified, they can get distracted by material desire. Right? Does that make sense? And then that was the second. And also that we find fault in others based on the faults that we have. Otherwise, we don't. How are we going to see their faults unless we have them? Does that make sense? Does it make sense?
No, it's necessary to have those faults to see them in others.
Means the category has to be there. It can be we're purified of those faults, but that means that area is there. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, one person A walks into person B's house and notices it's a mess. You know, and it's complaining, oh, why do you have such a messy house? Why would they notice the mess? Because their house is in a mess, right? Then person C comes to person B's house and notices it's quite a mess. Why do they notice it? Because they're very interested in cleanliness, right? They, you know, so now they keep everything clean, so now they notice that it's a mess. So, either in the purified or unpurified state, because otherwise you don't worry about things that are not within the purview of within your values. So it may be a positive, it may be a negative. Does that make sense? Or you may use the positive in a negative way, a negative in a positive way, you know, like that. You know, just like an example would be Chitraketu. He's making a comment about Lord Shiva, which he's exactly doing himself. Right? But he's meaning it, even though it's a negative presentation, it's actually meant to glorify Lord Shiva in his position. Right? So that's why Lord Shiva and all the sages present, you know, they didn't say anything. Just slightly smiled and thought, you know, they'd understood the joke, right? You know. Does that make sense?
Why Parvati didn't understand very well? Yesterday we...
Yes, this morning we answered that.
But also, that's for... Because it has to be like that, no? Otherwise this will not... If the person was not given, then... No?
That's another thing, that the Lord can take care of everything in his own way. It's not that the Lord's dependent upon these things. Right? Means we'll use that it's the Lord's pastime, because that way then we'll look at it in a proper light. But it's not that he has to do that to benefit Chitraketu in that particular way. He could do it in so many ways. But by benefiting the devotee and all that, then there's so much for us to learn also. So then we get the benefit also from hearing this pastime. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, just to help Indra, okay, so that's why here, the Pratigya. The general tendency of anyone within this material world is to be envious, and therefore to become a Krishna conscious person, one must curb this tendency. So we see is that how, but then you say, okay, we must curb this tendency. How do we do that? By worshipping the Lord. Right? So Diti, who is envious, she worshipped the Lord, even though she was worshipping the mode of ignorance, because she wanted the destruction of someone else. Still, because it's worship of Vishnu, she became purified. So in any case, anybody involved in devotional service, they will be purified. Yes. And the point is, it's not that it won't come back on yourself, because you're looking for a particular situation. She wanted one son to kill Indra, but she got 49 sons who were servants of Indra. So. It did backfire on it. Yeah.
She was trying hard, huh?
Huh?
She was trying hard.
Yes, but the point is she worshipped Vishnu for 1 year, so that's why then the Maruts came out to be demigods instead of demons. Like that. So that's the whole point. You know, just like Hiranyakashipu, he was thinking of the pure devotee when he conceived Prahlad. Therefore Prahlad was a pure devotee. Right? Yes? No? Yeah, so that's the process. You're connected to Krishna, there's benefit. Not connected to Krishna, then we don't necessarily find any benefit. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Because of their being killed, their mother, Diti, overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, contemplated as follows. Lord Indra, who is very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu by means of Lord Vishnu. Right? Because then the Manvantara Avatara, then they always come to protect the interests of Indra. Right? Like we see Vamanadeva also will do the same thing. So there's always this protection of Indra, because he's managing the universe. So here then they go to the Lord for this, and then the Lord takes cares, but she sees that the one who's instigating this is going to be Indra. Rather than, no, it's the universe is supposed to function in a certain way, therefore when it gets out of whack, then the Lord arranges. But, you know, the way things work is, that's the way envy works. No, you have to pin it on somebody. Right? In other words, the tail must be pinned on some donkey, right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Can we say that you couldn't do it on Vishnu because it was not the same categories?
Well, no, because he's the agent. Because if Indra hadn't wanted them gotten rid of, then Vishnu might not have gotten rid of them. You know, not that he wouldn't have, but the whole point is
he's higher than a friend.
Sorry?
Hiranyakashipu dexterity at that one line, but she's...
Yeah, that's another thing. But the whole point is it's to protect Indra's interests that it's all happening. That's how she's seeing it. Lord Indra, who's very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, by means of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Indra is cruel, hard-hearted, and sinful. When will I, having killed him, rest with a pacified mind? When dead, the bodies of all the rulers known as kings and great leaders will be transformed into worms, stool, or ashes. If one enviously kills others for the protection of such a body, does he actually know the true interest of life? Certainly he does not, for if one is envious of other entities, he surely goes to hell. 23-25. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives his analysis. Does one who commits violence to others beings for maintaining his body know his own benefit? He does not, because he goes to hell. This implies that Indra is without intelligence. She also is without intelligence because she wants to kill Indra, right? So Indra is killed, and so because of his envy, but she wants to kill Indra. She has the same envy, but she doesn't see it. That was the second point to learn. One can see that both she and Indra commit violence. Both are hard-hearted, and both do not know their own benefit. In this way, a person with real intelligence can determine the lack of discrimination of unintelligent people. Because what's the actual benefit you'll get? Then we say. Titi thought, Indra considers his body eternal, and thus he has become unrestrained. I therefore wish to have a son who can remove Indra's madness. Let me adopt some means to help me in this. Thinking in this way, with the desire for a son to kill Indra, Diti began constantly acting to satisfy Kasyapa by her pleasing behavior. O king, Diti always carried out Kasyapa's orders very faithfully, as he desired, with service, love, humility, and control, with words spoken very sweetly to satisfy her husband, and with smiles and glances at him. Diti attracted his mind and brought it under her control. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur reveals Mother Diti's mind. When a woman satisfies her husband, her desires are fulfilled. Therefore, I will satisfy my husband by service. This was her thought. Srila Prabhupada adds, right, so she's using dharma, but she's going to use it for some other purpose because it's not actually dharma. It's not her duty to kill off demigods like that. So she's going to use it for her own purpose, her own artha. Right? Does that make sense? She's following the proper path, but she's using it in an unfortunate way. So that same endeavor, if she was using that to, you know, learn transcendental knowledge or something else, because he's known as somebody very elevated, and then that would be a better use. But instead, she uses it for something lower. Right?
So that's motive passion?
Yes, that would be motive passion. You're doing the right thing, but you have other motives. Yes. Not so much the avenging. I haven't. It's a very popular thing, though, in the world. You know, somebody kills somebody's brother, and then he'll avenge him. You know, so it's very popular. But that's because of the bodily concept and all that. Because the point is, before, as we saw with Chitraketu, you know, who is the mother? Who is the father? They may be an agency, but at the same time, it's all due to everyone's karma. So it's not that you actually arranged it. It's just you happen to be the medium. Sorry? No. There is the point if somebody, let's say someone in the family has been insulted by someone else or dealt with badly, everybody else in that family won't have a close relationship with that person. That's mentioned by Manu, because that just maintains the relationship. Because it may be the family member is wrong, and that's why they were dealt with the way they were, but because they dealt in a way that wasn't proper, therefore, then you don't deal with them. You know what I'm saying? Instead of saying, well, you know, maybe they have a point, or maybe there's something to learn, or like that, you don't do that. No, it's just, no, they shouldn't do this. Then you bring in that understanding from another angle. You know what I'm saying? In other words, correcting them is important, but not by that particular point, because otherwise they'll just take it, oh, you support them, you don't support me. So, yeah. Srila Prabhupada adds, when a woman wants to endear herself to her husband and make him very faithful, she must try to please him in all respects. When the husband is pleased with his wife, the wife can receive all necessities, ornaments, and full satisfaction for her senses. Herein, this is indicated by the behavior of Diti. Right? Because that's the point, is you control someone else by your service. Just like the husband controls the wife by his mood of submission. That's the whole point, is that's the secret, is that, see, people will take this up because they want material benefits. But the actual point is no, it's that surrender, that's what actually is. It's not about control. It's about, that's actually the way to behave. So when we surrender to Krishna, then that's the act. We don't surrender to Krishna because then we'll control Krishna. Right? It doesn't work that way. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, although Kasyapa Muni was a learned scholar, he was captivated by Diti's artificial behavior, which brought him under her control. Therefore, he assured his wife that he would fulfill her desires. Such a promise by a husband is not at all astonishing. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma, the father of the living entities of the universe, saw that all the living entities were unattached. To increase population, he then created woman from the better half of man's body. For woman's behavior carries away a man's mind. 29-30. Sound familiar, that one? But it says from the better half, so that's why, you know, they even say better half, but that's actually the half. Well, if they said worse half, then would that go down very well? It's got to be better half. Huh? Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Ekanta Bhutani means the men were without association. By women, men's minds became captivated. They entered the continuous river of samsara. Right, because the original ones, they didn't care. The four Kumaras, they weren't interested like that. You know, Narad Muni and all this, they just weren't interested. So then he thought, okay, then we have to create ladies, you know. And then from that, then they'll get interested. Because Brahma is expanding the universe without a wife. So then his sons could also do the same, but they're not interested at all. Therefore he creates women, then they're interested, then the population goes on.
Can we say that the first one is Swayambhu and
his wife? Yeah, they're the first ones that you saw that really, you know, how you say, understood the point. Yes, yes, yes. Srila Prabhupada adds, this entire universe is going on, right, so all this goes back, so they're just mixing stories. So you have this one there, and Adam and Eve, that's only a few thousand years old. Right, you know. Yeah. This entire universe is going on under the spell of sexual attachment, which was created by Lord Brahma to increase the population of the entire universe, not only in human society, but also in other species. As stated by Rishabhdev in the fifth canto, Pumsa Striya Mituni Bhavam Etam, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.8. The entire world is going on under the spell of sexual attraction and desire between man and woman. When man and woman unite, the hard knot of this attraction becomes increasingly tight, and thus a man is implicated in the materialistic way of life. This is the illusion of the material world. This illusion acted upon Kasyapa Muni, although he was very learned and advanced in spiritual knowledge. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, my dear one, the most powerful sage Kasyapa, being extremely pleased by the mild behavior of his wife Diti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. 31. Kasyapa Muni said, O beautiful woman, O irreproachable lady, since I am very much pleased by your behavior, you may ask me for any benediction you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain, either in this world or in the next? A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. The Supreme Personality Godhead, Lord Vasudeva, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruit of workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. 32-34, Srila Prabhupada comments. The demigods are various assistants who act like the hands and legs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is not in direct touch with the Supreme Lord and cannot conceive of the exalted position of the Lord is sometimes advised to worship the demigods as various parts of the Lord. If women, who are usually very much attached to their husbands, worship their husbands as representatives of Vasudeva, the women benefit, just as Ajamiya benefited by calling for Narayana, his son. Ajamiya was concerned with his son, but because of his attachment to the name of Narayana, he attained salvation, simply by chanting that name. In India, husband is still called Pati Guru, the husband's spiritual master. If husband and wife are attached to one another for advancement in Krishna consciousness, the relation of cooperation is very effective for such advancement. Right? Because the whole idea is how you're engaging yourself. That makes things work. Right? So, it's not that man and woman are interacting, it's what's the purpose of it. So if it's sense gratification, one will become entangled in the material world. If it's for Krishna consciousness, one will become elevated. Right? So whichever one does. So we see the problem that's pointed out, what is the lower parts, then what's the reason behind it, where it comes from. And so therefore, if that's used in Krishna consciousness, then it will be useful. So Prabhupada gives a full explanation. Although the names of Indra and Agni are sometimes uttered in the Vedic mantras, Indraya Swaha, Agnaya Swaha, the Vedic sacrifices are actually performed for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. As long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. Right? Otherwise, then it's just a matter of Krishna consciousness. So, one should be worshipping Vishnu. If one's not, then if he worships the demigods, then he's actually indirectly worshipping the Lord, because he's following the Lord's authority. Right? Just as if someone just wants material benefit, the wife may then deal very nicely with the husband, she gets all the benefits she wants. But actually, it's, all these things should be used to serve the Lord, not something else. Does this make sense? That's the real reason for it. Because we see, like in Vaikuntha, husband or wife, they just, you know, spend their time talking about Vishnu and go doing service and all this. They don't have anything else of interest. So that's then the proper use of the position. Kashyapa Muni continued, "My dear wife, whose body is so beautiful, your waist being thin, a conscientious wife should be chaste and should abide by the orders of her husband. She should very devoutly worship her husband as a representative of Vasudeva. My dear gentle wife, because you have worshipped me with great devotion, considering me a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I shall reward you by fulfilling your desires, which are unobtainable for an unchaste wife." Okay, so the whole point, if you see that way, now whether the husband is Krishna conscious or not, one is thinking of Krishna, one is doing one's service for Krishna, therefore one will advance spiritually. Right? Does that make sense? If you're just doing it because this is the method, so then it just becomes bhakti, Mr. Karma. Right? But if it's karma, Mr. Bhakti, then it will be very effective. It will be effective on the material platform, even if it's bhakti, Mr. Karma. Because we see, she got an effect. Right? And actually a better effect than what she wanted originally. Because right? Before, it's like all their sons are going to be killed by Indra. Now she has sons that actually work with Indra, and he takes care of them. So it actually worked out better.
Diti replied, "O my husband, O great soul, I have now lost my sons. If you want to give me a benediction, I ask you for an immortal son who can kill Indra."
Right, immortal son. Yeah, we're in the material world. Hello. Yeah, okay. I pray, but, you know, immortal means like the demigods. They live a very long time. Well, the point is he was, you know, she's behaving so nicely and all that, and then this is what she was. Oh my God! So now you can see is now being attached, and you know, he just thought because she's behaving so nice, everything must be so wonderful. Yeah, yeah, like that, or some nice house, or just some children, you know, something more. But not like, you know, I want a son who can kill Indra.
That's no, kind
of, yeah, nothing else. I don't even need a new sari. Just want the son that will kill Indra. Yes.
I pray for this because Indra, with the help of Vishnu, has killed my two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Srila Prabhupada comments. The words Indra Hanam means one who can kill Indra, but it also means one who follows Indra. The word Amrityum refers to the demigods who do not die like ordinary human beings because they have extremely long durations of life. Therefore, the word Amrityum indicates that Didi wanted a son who would be equal in status to the demigods.
Right? And, you know, she's thinking as an enemy or who could kill Indra, but it also means who follows. So then she got that. Right? She worshipped Vishnu and he fulfilled her desires, actually, as she said it. That she would have sons who were immortals like the demigods who followed Indra. You know, that may not have been her actual intent, but...
Verses 38 to 44. Kashyapa Muni's analysis of the nature of women.
Looks like it'll be fun.
Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Upon hearing Diti's request, Kashyapa Muni was very much aggrieved. Alas, he lamented, now I face the danger of the impious act of killing Indra, right? Because now he'll have sanctioned it. And then he'll be the cause, just like Vishnu, how you say, you know, killed Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, but at the intention, or, you know, of Indra. So now here, is Indra would be killed, but it's because of his arrangement. Yes. Yeah, why not? Yeah, keep it simple. Just ask for sorry. Don't want to overload the... yeah. You just see what the thing... Point is that she'll be Krishna conscious because whatever she gets also will be used in Krishna service. So therefore, what things could be used in Krishna service, then that's the one she'll be interested in. Right? That's what was the discussion in the last chapter. It's what is useful in Krishna consciousness, that's what the devotee's interested in. What he's not interested, what's not useful, he's not interested. So piety means those things can be used for Krishna. Impiety means what are not. Right? So it's not, it could be used, it's the usage of that makes it pious. You know what I'm saying? Like that chair, is it pious or impious? It depends what you do in the chair. Because the chair just does its religion. So therefore, if I sit on it for some nonsense, it's only doing the chair religion, and that's it. That's why that religion must be given up. That doesn't mean we stop using the chair. It means that we engage in the Lord's service. Therefore, now it becomes part of Bhagavad Dharma. If the wife is always doing devotional service and all that, definitely by that association and that, he'll get some benefit. Because if he's taking care of her, then he gets 1/6 of her pious credits. Right? But if his devotional service he's performed, she gets 50%. So again, where's this equality? This, you know. Yeah. Reality is we're not talking about equal, we're talking about fair. Fair 9-1 and fair, you know, 50% as opposed to 16.5%. That makes sense. Now, if she is the one that goes out and makes the money and she's doing this, then, you know, she just keeps that because he won't get the sixth. The sixth is for taking care. Just like the king takes care of the kingdom, then whatever pious activities perform, he gets 1/6. He also gets 1/6 of their karma because he takes the tax. You know what I'm saying? So it's all worked out. Kashyapa Muni thought, alas, I have now become too attached to material enjoyment. Taking advantage of this, my mind has been attracted by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
in the form of a woman, my wife, right? So this is these Prajapatis and that, they're seeing on this level. This is how they think. It's not just, you know, he just thought like this. That they think, they see everything in relation to the Lord and all this and that. Whether they're interested in devotion or not, that's another thing. But they actually see on this level because of their purity. Therefore, I am surely a wretched person who will glide down towards hell. This woman, my wife, has adopted a means that follows her nature, and therefore she is not to be blamed. But I am a man, therefore all condemnation upon me. Right? So she just did what is her nature. Because whether she's using it for a bad purpose or a good purpose, this is the nature, and this is how she'll act. I am not at all conversant with what is good for me, since I could not control my senses. Srila Prabhupada comments. The natural instinct of a woman is to enjoy the material world. She induces her husband to enjoy this world by satisfying his tongue, belly, and genitals, which are called jihwa, udara, and upasta. Yeah. What's it? Yeah, jihwa upasta vegan. Is that in? Yeah. A woman is expert in cooking palatable dishes so that she can satisfy her husband in eating. When one eats nicely, his belly is satisfied. And as soon as the belly is satisfied, the genitals become strong. Especially when a man is accustomed to eating meat and drinking wine and similar passionate things, he certainly becomes sexually inclined. It should be understood that sexual inclinations are meant not for spiritual progress, but for gliding down to hell. Thus, Kasyapa Muni considered his situation lamented. Situation and lamented. In other words, to be a householder is very risky, unless one is trained and the wife is a follower of her husband. Right. So in other words, if in performing these activities, she's a follower of what are the ideals that the husband has in the way of Krishna consciousness and all this, then things will work out very nicely. Right. Otherwise, she can follow the same process, but use it for her own purposes, which won't be necessarily as good. Now, if the husband's not Krishna conscious, then she still serves in the same way. Everything in the house is peaceful, but she's using all the benefits for Krishna consciousness. So then she'll get the Krishna conscious benefit. But in any case, by performing the duties in that natural way, then there's always benefit, whether it's spiritual or material. So,
what would happen when it's the opposite? When the husband's Krishna conscious, but the woman is not Krishna conscious?
He performs his duties and, you know, he goes back to Godhead. And her, who knows? But because if she's chaste, she's connected, then there's a better chance. She'll follow the husband.
She still gets the 1/6?
No, she gets 50%.
Oh, okay. Even if he's not Krishna conscious.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Yep. Whoever brought up this idea of equality, there's no question that it's you know, equal like that. Fair, maybe. Equal, never. Yeah.
Okay.
A husband should be trained at the very beginning of his life. Kamara acharet pragyo dharmam bhagavatan iha. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.1. During the time of brahmacharya, or student life, a brahmacharya should be taught to be expert in Bhagavad Dharma, devotional service. Then, when he marries, if his wife is faithful to her husband and follows him in such life, the relationship between husband and wife is very desirable, because then both of them will go back to Godhead. So that's desirable. But if they're not Krishna conscious, then it's very risky. However, a relationship between husband and wife without spiritual consciousness, but strictly for sense gratification, is not at all good. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.3 that especially in this age, Kali Yuga, Dampatye Bhir Ruchir Hetu, the relationship between husband and wife will be based on sexual power. Therefore, household life in this Kali Yuga is extremely dangerous unless both wife and husband take to Krishna consciousness. Right? So that's why we see is whatever we're dealing with
it's not about the thing itself. We tend to, because of this secondary vision, we our external vision, that it's always about the thing that we're working with. But it's not. It's about how you use it. What's the intent of it? Right? What's the attitude in which it's used? Right? So the ultimate intent, the attitude, and then the actual, workings that you're using. So people only look at the workings. Attitude isn't so much discussed. And the ultimate, that's also not discussed. Does that make sense? So if it is, then it becomes a very useful position. If it's not, then it's not a good position.
Kashyapa Muni continued, thinking, a woman's face is as attractive and beautiful as a blossoming lotus flower during autumn. Her words are very sweet, and they give pleasure to the ear. But if we study a woman's heart, we can understand it to be extremely sharp, like the blade of a razor. In these circumstances, who could understand the dealings of a woman? Srila Prabhupada comments. Woman is now depicted very well from the materialistic point of view by Kashyapa Muni, right?
Because we have to understand is the feminine nature is representing the material energy, right? While the masculine is representing I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. So both of them have the same mood, and both of them are under the illusion of the material energy. But just by nature, that's what it'll be. So if a woman's materialistic, then this is very much what we'll be dealing with. She's not, she's a devotee, then we see, like Chittaketu, and that all good qualities are there, so they don't become disturbed. Does that make sense?
Women are generally known as the fair sex, and especially in youth, at the age of 16 or 17, women are very attractive to men. Therefore, a woman's face is compared to a blooming lotus flower in autumn.
Because otherwise, like in the heavenly planet, they wouldn't get older than 16. That's kind of where it ends. Right?
Just as a lotus is extremely beautiful in autumn, a woman at the threshold of youthful beauty, is extremely attractive. In Sanskrit, a woman's voice is called Nari Swara, because women generally sing, and their singing is very attractive. At the present moment, cinema artists, especially female singers, are especially welcome. Some of them earn fabulous amounts of money simply by singing.
Right. I think I know who she's still singing anymore, but Nightingale?
Lata Mangeshkar.
Yeah, Lata?
Mangeshkar.
Is she still singing?
No.
Huh?
It's no more. Just, she's still famous.
Yeah, but it's very recent that she stopped then. But otherwise, it's like back for the last 40 or 50 years. It's like all the voices of all the heroines in the Hindi movies are all sung by her.
Oh, okay.
Hmm?
Lata Mangeshkar.
Lata Mangeshkar. She's South Indian, no?
Marathi.
Okay.
Not very well.
She's known as, I think she's gotten awards and all that, governmental, whatever, Padma Shri or whatever, like this. She sings them all.
She put the voice in it.
Because they always sing songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Hindi movies,
yeah.
There has to be a song. That's why they all sound the same, because it's the same woman. No, because it's the same, because she, I guess she's considered to have the best voice, so she sings them all. Because there may be others that have as good or better voices, but they're not going to sing for the Hindi movies. Right, but she is, so therefore, that's what he said. Prabhupada says, very much welcome.
Even at this age, her voice seems like an 8-year-old or 9-year-old girl.
Yes, even now. It's probably very hard to sing or just to get in there and sing all these stupid songs like that, so she's retired. But yeah, a lot of like that. There's even, what is her name from the West? I think Julie Andrews.
Yep.
She had a voice that four octaves, really, really, considered the best in the industry. And then she had something wrong with the throat, had a operation, so it dropped down, she couldn't do four octaves anymore. So it's welcome. People appreciate it. So that's, Yeah, so I think she's probably quite wealthy, huh?
Yeah. Definitely.
Therefore, as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a woman singing is dangerous because it can make a sannyasi fall a victim to the woman. Sannyas means giving up the company of women. But if a sannyasi hears the voice of a woman and sees her beautiful face, he certainly becomes attracted and is sure to fall down. There have been many examples. Even the great sage Vishwamitra fell a victim to Menaka. Therefore, a person desiring to advance in spiritual consciousness must be especially careful not to see a woman's face or hear a woman's voice. To see a woman's face and appreciate its beauty, or to hear a woman's voice and appreciate her singing, as very nice, is a suitable fall down for a brahmachari or sannyasi, as a subtle fall down. Mm. Thus, the description of a woman's features by Kasyapa Muni is very instructive, right? Yes. No, but the point, if it's kirtan, it's for Krishna, then there's not a problem. But if she's singing just to show off her voice and all that, that's what you don't want to get involved in. You know, it's just like, let's say, the family are there, the relatives are there, and, you know, one of the ladies in the family is good at singing, so after dinner they'll sit down and they'll sing something and all that. So that's just for the pleasure of hearing, and it's nice, and it's, you understand. But in kirtan, then there's not really a problem. Does that make sense? But, yeah. But, you know, you wouldn't have a preference of it, but there's not a problem in that way. Does that make sense? So therefore, if it's a matter of Krishna consciousness, that's one thing. If it's a matter of prestige, then that falls into this category that Lord Chaitanya is recommending against. So if it's a matter of no women should be able to, you know, sing, you know, equal rights and all, it's prestige. That's mundane. That shouldn't be allowed. You know what I'm saying? Because if they're really into kirtan, there's so many opportunities to do kirtan. Like, just like this. In Mayapur during the festival, you know, except for the kirtan male, how often do you hear, let's say, like Shiva Ramaj do kirtan? Basically, never, right? Okay. But every evening on the roof here, wherever he is, where he stays, every evening there's a kirtan. You know, for hours. So that's the point, is if people really are into kirtan, wherever you are, sit down, have a kirtan, get friends over in that. But no, it has to be public, it has to be recognized, it has to be, yes, she's great, she's fabulous. That's what Lord Chaitanya is talking about. That should be avoided. But if it's nice kirtan, the ladies, you know, they're arranging kirtan, they all get together, they do that, then if people hear that, there's no problem. Because that's meant for Krishna. The other one's meant for prestige. You know what I'm saying? Say what you like. Though I do remember in some places it's not a matter of prestige, it's a matter of maintaining sanity. Like, I remember one temple, they had this one devotee. He came in, he led terrible kirtan. I mean, really, really. No one could follow, no one could do anything. It was really bad, but he was so enthusiastic.
Poor guy.
Yeah. And so I came to the temple. I didn't know the background, because generally if I go to a temple, I'll watch what happens first, because every temple there's some slight difference how they run their program, how they sing, what they do. So I watch first. But as soon as I walked in, then this lady, she was carrying a kid. She said, "Well, you should lead the kirtan." He said, you know, like that. You know, well, let's see, like that. She says, "No, start now," like that. And then I didn't. And then this devotee walked in and was about to sing. She started singing. Just like, you know, just, you know, otherwise no one could tolerate it, you know. So it wasn't a matter of prestige. That was a matter of just, you know, self-preservation. You know, so you do have things like that also. So. But in other words, these whole points is that they all have their position. It's just a matter of how it's done. Men tend towards the public things, women towards the private. Now the public, it's a variety of people, who knows, likes, doesn't like, the moods are very different, it's more difficult. If it's private, then you know that you have selected people, there's more common mood, it will be appreciated, otherwise they don't have to be there. Right? They're coming because they want to be there. Does that make sense? You go to Mangalarka because you have to be there. But if you're having a kirtan and all that, people are there because they want to be there. Much more favorable for the feminine nature. Does that make sense? Yeah, so all these things are available, it's just you have to know how to get them. Yes?
Some women are by nature, they are like more shy, and they just need to do this for Krishna, like go out to country and go out.
The point is those who don't mind going out, they should go out. The ones that are too shy, why bother them? You know what I'm saying? The ones that aren't shy, let them go out. The ones that are shy, there's plenty of other services. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it should be distinguished and make a distinction also between first generation and second. First generation has grown up on the street. Second generation hasn't. So therefore, you know, let the first generation go out and do all that stuff. You know. Otherwise, then, you know, if making money is the ultimate goal, then go check out Vegas or something, you know, like that. Don't bother with our temples, you know.
When a woman's bodily features are attractive, when her face is beautiful, and when her voice is sweet, she is naturally a trap for a man. That's why he mentioned thin waist. Right? Because it means the bodily features, like that. Then you mention the face, right? Because the face is the the face of the woman is the first face of Prajapati. Right? Somebody says. A bit lower. Like that. It means, in other words, what's above the navel is the first face, what's below the navel is the second face. That's why Prabhupada always comments about these women wearing short skirts. They're advertising the second face. So that's why he says it's only for sex. So like, well, what do you mean it's only that? Why then that? It's just like, let us say we have the girl, she's wearing a full top, but she's wearing a mini, real short mini. Right? Like a micro mini. We'll say it's sexual, it's not very nice, right? Now let's say she's wearing a full gown that's all the way to the floor. Right? But her dress only goes up and just covers the breast. Nothing on the shoulders, nothing on the arms. We'll say it's very formal, very, very sophisticated, very feminine. Why? Because one is showing something in the first face, the other is showing in the second face. That's just the way it is. You know, we can say what we want, but this is how God's arranged it. Somebody said? The Shastras advise that when such a woman comes to serve a man, she should be considered like a dark well covered by grass. In the fields there are many such wells, and a man who does not know about them drops through the grass and falls down. Thus there are many such instructions. Since the attraction of the material world is based on attraction for women, Kashyapa Muni thought, under the circumstances, who can understand the heart of a woman? Right? Because he just became attracted. He didn't know that this whole point was to get a son that can kill Indra. Right, so he couldn't discern that. You know? So that's the point. So therefore, it's like a dark well with grass on top. It looks fine, but it's, you know. So that's the thing. That's why then for the woman, she's trying to be Krishna conscious. The man, he's trying to be Krishna conscious. That combination will then work very well together. Yes.
How was Kashyapa Muni called anyway? Because she lost her sons. They had too many wives. They didn't have any notice.
No, that's there, but then you expect maybe some more sons, not one that's going to kill Indra. He's not complaining about sons. He's complaining about, you know, his first problem was sons at the wrong time. Then they were wrong time, they got themselves killed. Now it's a son that's going to kill the guy who killed his sons that were born at the wrong time. You know. And both of these times it's all by her feminine charms.
He should know.
Yes, he should know. Yes. You should have figured it out, right?
Okay, so the material based on attraction for women, it's all about women. Anytime that we try to make something nice in the material, women are already always involved. Otherwise, if it's men, no women, no possibility of women, then you don't see any finities at all. You know, a bunch of guys sitting around the campfire, drinking out of tin cans and eating off of tin plates. And what are they eating? Beans. Right? Which is going to give them gas. You understand? You know, that's material world with no frills. Right? But as soon as then it's actually trying to enjoy the material world, then it has to be feminine compliant. So therefore, does that make sense? Because if there's no women involved, where's the enjoyment? We
don't really want to go there in this conversation. We're not going for the alternative 56 alternatives of other. Yes. It's still, the whole point is feminine. It's just a matter of, it's gone that, you know, feminine nature is, you know, the guy is, likes, he's conjugally attracted to the pillar, you know. You know what I'm saying? Just something strange. But the point is, there's still going to be, I'm the controller and enjoyer, and whatever he's attracted to will be enjoyed. You know, just like here with the man and woman, she's attracted to him, that she'll control and enjoy him. So it's still the masculine move, though she'll use feminine techniques. And the man, he's attracted to the woman to control and enjoy. He'll use masculine techniques. You know what I'm saying? But that's if they're trained. If they're not trained, the girls still use feminine, but they won't be pious. Right? And the boy, he'll actually try to use feminine techniques, but because he's a boy, it doesn't actually work out very good. Right? You know, when you're 8 years old, it works like a charm. But when you're, you know, 25, it doesn't work so good. You know? Does that make sense? You know, unless you look like you're off the front cover of some magazine. Then it'll work for a little longer. But. Yes.
Chanaki Pandit is also advised. Vishvaso naiva kartavya strishu raja kuleshu cha. There are two persons one should not trust, a politician and a woman. These, of course, are authoritative Shastric injunctions, and we should therefore be very careful in our dealings with women. So he's saying, these are authoritative, so one should understand, not saying, oh no, this is nonsense, we don't follow, this is atheistic, and it's not beneficial for anyone, not for the woman, not for the man, not for anybody. Right, so the politician, you don't know what's behind, they'll present themselves. The woman, you don't also. The woman's trained, she's trying to be Krishna conscious, then things work very nicely. You don't have this problem. But if she's not Krishna conscious, then this is what you have, just like with a politician. You know, they're Krishna conscious, you know, like Yudhishthir, you know what you have. But if they're not, like Duryodhana, you don't know what you have. Right? Duryodhana is inviting Bhima, having a feast, feeding him personally with his own hand, and everything's poisoned. So that's the whole point. If someone's Krishna conscious, there's no problem. If they're not Krishna conscious, only problem. Yeah?
Sometimes our Krishna conscious movement is criticized for mingling men and women. But Krishna conscious is meant for everyone, and for anyone. Whether one is a man or woman does not matter. Lord Krishna personally says, Striyo Vaishyas Tata Shudras Te Pi Yanti Param Gatim. Whether one is a woman, Shudra, or Vaishya, not to speak of being a Brahmin or Kshatriya, everyone is fit to return home back to Godhead. If he strictly follows the instruction of the spiritual master in Shastra, we therefore request all the members of the Krishna conscious movement, both men and women, not to be attracted by bodily features, but only be attracted by Krishna. Then everything will be all right. Otherwise, there will be danger. In other words, if you're Krishna conscious, it doesn't matter who you are. But if you're not Krishna conscious, there'll always be a problem.
Kashyapa Muni continued thinking. To satisfy her own interests, their own interests, women deal with men as if the men were most dear to them, but no one is actually dear to them. Women are supposed to be very saintly, but for their own interests, they can kill even their husbands, sons, or brothers, or cause them to be killed by others. Srila Prabhupada comments. A woman's nature has been particularly well studied by Kashyapa Muni. Women are self-interested by nature, and therefore they should be protected by all means so that their natural inclination to be too self-interested will not be manifested. Women need to be protected by men. A woman should be cared for by her father in her childhood, by her husband in her youth, and by her grown sons in her old age. This is the instruction of Manu, who says that a woman should not be given independence at any age. Women must be cared for so that they will not be free to manifest their natural tendency for gross selfishness. Because right? if one's always involved and interactive, then there's always the mood of service. So the husband is taking care of the family, he's taking care of the wife. That service is there, she'll naturally reciprocate, so it all works very nicely. But if she goes out on her own, then it's just a matter of what will get her benefit.
Does that make sense?
In the modern society, in the West, women try to compete always with the husband. She wants to earn more money. She wants to have her
fine, great, great. But then the point is where's the relationship? What's it based on? No, but I'm just saying, is that the point is the relationship is what's important. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then it's these things have to be understood. One has to be Krishna conscious. She wants to make more money, great. But the point is are they going to be Krishna conscious? You know what I'm saying? Because if one's Krishna conscious, then it will be seen whether it's important to make more money or not. That's what we were discussing yesterday. Is we first take all of our nature, engage it in the Lord's service. Right? Having engaged in the Lord's service, as we become purified, then it'll become obvious whether the continuance of that is important. So, if it's something that can be used in Krishna's service, we continue using it. If it's something that's not important for Krishna's service, now that we've lost the attraction and attachment for it, then we drop it.
So, it's false that when a woman said, if I work, I will lose my femininity, something like that?
It means the thing is here, the discussion is on a theme. So, it's not about discussing all the modern problems that are there at once. As they come up, you take them. You know what I'm saying? Because that one theme is there. We're discussing whether it's there. Point is this, she values her femininity, she'll do things in a way that she can maintain it. So there should be family members that are encouraging, creating the environment in which she can maintain it. That's the whole point. Because even if a wife, technically according to the Vedas, even if the wife works, makes money, if she's under the protection of her husband, the money belongs to her husband. You understand? But if she's just doing it on her own, then it's hers. You know what I'm saying? So then if she goes out and makes more money, that's her money. You know, if she's just doing it as part for the family, she can make more money than him, and so she can do that, and the relationship is nice, it's the family's money. Right? But if she's just doing it, you know, just for her own satisfaction and all that, whatever money she makes, that's just her money. And the husband will maintain himself with his own money. Right? Because now if she maintains him, now there'll be problem. So he maintains himself with his own money. So she can use that for, you know, shoes or something. Right? But he'll take care of the general stuff. There have been many cases, even in the present day, in which women have killed their husbands to take advantage of their insurance policies. This is not a criticism of women, but a practical study of their nature. Such natural instincts of a woman or man are manifest only in the bodily conception of life. When either a man or woman is advanced in spiritual consciousness, the bodily conception of life practically vanishes.
There'll be naturally, they'll be functioning according to the mechanics of that nature. But these lower aspects, those will go away. Right? So that's does that make sense?
We should see all women as spiritual units, aham brahmasmi, whose only duty is to satisfy Krishna. When the influences of the material, different modes of material nature, which result from one's possessing a material body, will not act.
It means you won't be controlled by. It doesn't mean you don't take them and engage them in naturally. You know, in other words, you apply the modes, you're not controlled by the modes. Does that make sense? So the woman will use the feminine nature to do service for Krishna. But she's not controlled by the feminine nature. Here on the material plane, she's controlled by it. Therefore, she'll tend to be self-centered, and therefore anything can be done.
I don't know if it's said yet.
Does that make sense?
The Krishna conscious movement is so beneficial that it can very easily counteract the contamination of material nature, which results from one's possessing a material body. Bhagavad Gita therefore teaches in the very beginning that whether one is a man or a woman, one must know that he or she is not the body but a spiritual soul. Everyone should be interested in the activities of the spirit soul, not the body. As long as one is activated by the bodily conception of life, there's always the danger of being misled, whether one is man or woman. Right?
So one is activated by the material bodily conception. So it's because of that, that's why you're inspired, you want to do things, because of the bodily conception, there'll always be problem. But if it's Krishna conscious, there won't be problem.
Yes?
To always be engaged in Krishna service. The point is to always be engaged. So in other words, whatever is the natural feminine tendencies, you just use them for service to Krishna. So you're engaged in the direct activities of devotional service. No, it's not that they'll go away. It means you get rid of being controlled by them. It's not that the feminine nature won't remain. It's just that it will be valuable for use in Krishna consciousness. It won't be something that controls you and therefore takes you away from Krishna consciousness. Right? Because is a devotee self-centered? No. Is a devotee hard-hearted? No. So if a woman is a devotee, then she won't have those natures. But it doesn't mean she doesn't have the feminine nature. You know what I'm saying? So even if she's alone, then she just sees that everything she does is for Krishna. Right? Keep the house nice for Krishna and the devotees, cook nicely for Krishna and the devotees, do, you know, whatever it is. Be pleasant, be nice. You know, engage in things that engages the nature, but not because of the nature itself, but because of devotional service. Does that make sense? This is the fine point, is that if connected to Krishna, it's fine. If it's not connected to Krishna, it's not fine. It's not that, no, women are fine, or we can't say this about women. We can say this about women. This is the shot. This is the point. But if one's Krishna conscious, then these negative things aren't there. Right? Just like the men. It talks about the men being attached to their house, their family, their wealth, and all that. So we see there's more talk about that than there is about the women. Right? So if one becomes Krishna conscious, that goes away. It doesn't mean that the duties of the man who performed the duties of the woman who performed change. It just means that now there's no material consideration. So by doing that, you go back to Godhead. So the point is if what you're doing will take you back to Godhead, what does it matter what you're doing? You know what I'm saying? Let's say the Shudra, he's a plumber. So he fixes all the pipes. Now he becomes, you know, an advanced Vaishnava. Does he have to stop fixing the pipes? No, because he does it and uses the money for being Krishna conscious. So it doesn't have to change. It's not that, you know, instead of being a plumber, now he becomes, you know, how you say, a manager. You know, if he gives up plumbing and just preaches and distributes books, that's okay. That's great. That's moving up. But to go from that into just being a manager or business, that's not necessary. Does that make sense? So what we're meaning is the woman, by engaging her nature in Krishna's service, can go back to Godhead. So what's the need of doing something else? You know, why do we have, just like men don't do a very good job acting as women, so women don't do a very good job acting as men either. Right? A man who hasn't been properly trained, so he actually kind of behaves like a woman. Men don't like him, women don't like him. Same way as women who've tried to behave like men, then men don't like him, women don't like them. Right? Otherwise, it's like you said yesterday. You know, you have the machismo guys who are basically men behaving as women, but thinking they're men. So then you have the liberated women who are women behaving as men, but they're actually behaving as women. And so therefore, the machismo men, the liberated women, follow their example. They're not following the example of the really gentle, you know, properly behaved, cultured guys. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's like this. You'll see the girl either dress as a girl, but if she dresses up as a boy, it's always something really butch. No? Yeah, so, you know, it's not that she goes out and gets, you know, buys herself a nice, you know, men's Armani suit, goes down, gets a nice haircut, gets, you know, the Oxford shoes and stuff like that. No. You know, it'll be something really tough, you know. you know, a blue flat top or something.
Is there such a thing for women as like a man in the bachelor, like bachelor? You don't know the grammar you have, it's not dynamic. Is there such a thing that women could also do in this case?
No. Basically, women are, you know, either married grihasthas or unmarried grihasthas. You know, even for those who are bachelors, technically they're just unmarried grihasthas. A bachelor is an unmarried grihastha. They're not actually, they don't have the glory of being their own ashram. You know, just like shudras, that they're boys, but they're grihasthas that are just too young to be married. And then when they're old enough and responsible, then they get married. They don't do brahmacharya. So a bachelor is the same. Because you know? Otherwise, what's the responsibility? He has a skill, he makes money, he does the thing, so what does he do with his money? He just spends it on gizmos and gadgets, gets some fancy, you know, car, gets some fancy this, fancy that, gets all, you know, all fancy, fancy, fancy. But where's the responsibility? Right? You know, and then the best part is, you know, he's so independent, but his mom does his washing. Comes over once a week, cleans the apartment, you know, washes the clothes.
Completely dysfunctional, though.
Yeah. So they're just grihasthas. You know what I'm saying? But if a woman retires from that, she's called a recluse. Does that make sense? So it's like the men, the vanaprastha, then they can be reclusive, they can go out preaching, they can be with the wife or not. But it's the same principle. So when they're alone, so woman goes back into reclusion. The man goes out, travels. Right? Because in other words, if you stay in your environment just to that and only work within that, you know, then you have the most influence and it's also the most austere. Well, for the man to keep traveling and not have any real place, that's what's austere for them. And then so everybody gets benefit. So these both will create benefit. So the recluse is the feminine nature of sannyas. Right? So, the soul is sometimes described as Purusha because whether one is dressed as a man or woman, one is inclined to enjoy this material world. As before, Prabhupada was saying, he will do this, he will do that. He was talking about both. This is what he means here. So they may be dressed as a man, they're inclined to enjoy the material world. Therefore, they're described as Purusha. One who has this spirit of enjoyment is described as Purusha. It means one who. Doesn't matter if it's male or female. Whether one is a man or woman, he is not interested in serving others. Everyone is interested in satisfying his or her own senses. Krishna consciousness, however, provides first-class training for a man or for a woman. A man should be trained to be a first-class devotee of Lord Krishna, and a woman should be trained to be a first, very chaste follower of her husband. That will make the lives of both of them happy. Then they can function as that. So they're both devotees. Right? So even if the wife's not a devotee, if she's trained in this way, she will function. The household life will go nicely. Then if he's a devotee, then naturally it'll go in that direction because the environment in which you're functioning is that. If she is a devotee, now it becomes even more dynamic and then they can both do be Krishna conscious together. Okay, so stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Trinitai Gaura Prinanati.